You're listening to the Rural Advancement Podcast. Rural Advancement provides resources to empower, equip, and encourage rural pastors and churches. Join our community by visiting us at ruraladvancement.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rural Advancement. This is the podcast that is by rural people and for rural people. It is our goal every single week, week in and week out, to bring you content that is not just spoken to the rural church, but is spoken by people who get it, people who have lived, worked, and ministered in small, out-of-the-way places, and people who understand the immense value of the work that God is doing there. I'm your host, Joe Epley, and I just wanted to take this week to dive into an interview that I was privileged to be a part of on the Assemblies of God Next Gen Leaders podcast. I was interviewed by Holly Davis and her co-host Julie Pratt, who work at the national office, on the subject of rural youth ministry. Now, we all recognize that small town youth ministry has its own quirks, and I was privileged to be able to do it for about 10 years. But beyond that, the podcast has general application for all of rural ministry. What does it look like to love our community well, to kind of dive into that? And so for this week, I wanted to give you the chance to hear from me, to give you a chance to hear the interview, and honestly, to give you a chance to check out their podcast. The link will be in the show notes. And so without further ado, let's dive into that conversation.
And remote, all the way from beautiful Montana, we have the Student Ministries Director, Joe Epley. Joe, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, guys. It's nice to be here, even if it's from far away. So
I do have a question. So is it snowing yet in Montana?
No, but well, yes, it's a big state. There's snow a lot of places, not exactly where I'm at. But then I was talking to our admin in the office here, and she said, oh, that winter storm warning is coming in 3 hours. And so, you know, we're just getting under the radar right here. So, yeah, it's a bit of that season, you know, I would say.
Love it. So at the time of filming, we are mid-November. So this will probably come out probably in early 2025. So for those of you that are watching or listening, we are filming right before Thanksgiving. I'm surprised you guys don't have snow yet.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Again, we do. Places so, like Bozeman, Kalispell, the places that have mountains, we got plenty. Some of the eastern side, we don't. Again, big state, a lot of geography to cover there. But so, yeah, there's certainly people who are already knee deep in it, you know, and we're just crossing our fingers, hoping it doesn't hit here too fast in southeast Montana.
Yes, so we'll pray together with That's you right. for that. I'm not That's a fan right. of snow.
Although you're a fan of Christmas.
I am, but those don't equal each other.
That's true. Well, Joe, we really are so honored and so thankful that you're with us today. You serve, as I said, the Student Ministries Director there in Montana, but you are also a part of a group for, and help me make sure I say it correctly, for Rural Advancement. Why don't you just describe a little bit about what that is and what you guys do?
Yeah, so really it started with a vision from Dwight Sandoz, who is actually our former superintendent of Nebraska. And he has since become connected with Trinity Bible College and Graduate School. He runs their rural master's program. So they have a master's degree offered in rural ministry, which is, you know, a very niche kind of educational offering, but obviously a huge need to look at rural leaders and say, hey, you're not just doing well, but you deserve to have resources that are tailored to you. You know, we recognize that rural is a context where you kind of can feel out of place in the larger church world, because the most common example we tell is you might have a conference speaker that you attend and they say, well, you know, in no uncertain terms, they'll get done with their sermon and say, well, if you do these steps, you know, my church went from 100 people to 5,000 people. And a lot of people are in counties of 2,500 people. Like, sure. It's not just not likely. It is not possible. And we believe in a miracle working God. We believe in the wonders of who he is. But again, it can start to feel so disheartening to look around and go, man, I'm just trying to pick out any chunks of knowledge I can glean. Instead, Dwight's heart in starting Rural Advancement was basically to make resources that are by rural and for rural. And so the whole point is to say, hey, you're not just going to be spoken down to, spoken across to, spoken to from a distance, but we're going to get rural practitioners who are educated, who are empowered, who are you know, doing well and thriving in their context. And so it's developed into something super cool. I mean, obviously you've got rural master's students, but there's also podcast arms and blogs and different methods to get education across, retreats and things like that. And so really it's just trying to see a certain context and empower it well.
You know? I love that. I love that. And I was just with Joe about a month ago or so at your youth convention. And Joe, it was so fun to watch you. And we'll talk. I'd love for both of you, because Julie, you guys ministered in a rural area as well. Yeah. So, but watching you, Joe, and I want to say it was the second night. Joe was so fired up, you know, with just the relational component of everybody coming together. I think if I heard it right, you were just running around going, "I love my job. I love my job."
It's pretty true. Yeah. We had brought the youth conference back. Our youth convention event had been kind of dormant for a couple of years. And so, so deep down, I mean, I would like to tell you there's all these spiritual reasons the Lord was speaking to me. And I think I was just like, this event didn't bomb. I love what I get to do. You know, you just get pumped because you're like, hey, it worked. Isn't that great?
You were fired up.
And so it meant a ton to our students and our people. And so it was just a huge win.
Not just
for my role, but I mean, what an awesome chance for Montana to connect with each other and get together. And so, yeah, it was definitely a fun time. I was glad we got to share that. So.
Super, super fun to just watch you on that relational side. Yeah. Why don't both of you just kind of walk us through, before we kind of dive in to some of the questions? One, this is a really important conversation to have, but what would you both say? What are some of the marked differences? And Joe, you kind of already stated it, but what are some things that you guys both notice as a marked difference ministering in a rural area as opposed to urban? What are some differences, and why is it so important that we address it?
One of the biggest things that I noticed, and maybe some of it is because of my upbringing, was raised in Philadelphia. And so landing in a rural setting was a huge change for me. But one of the things I noticed was that the population is generational. So people who are born in that raise their children and marry and raise their next generation. And there's a really unique dynamic to that when they're all within a couple miles of each other in their lives and their spaces, in the way they practice their faith. They live there just... everyday rhythms. It's really different. And so because of that, sometimes, if you will, as an outsider, I had ground that I had to gain to be able to effectively minister in that community. So that was one of the biggest reality checks for me. I don't know about you, Joe. What did you experience?
Yeah, my initial thought, if I'm being honest, was like, man, what's not different sometimes urban and rural? But tailoring off of what you said, just as a set the scene type moment for us, is I don't disagree. I think that there's such a generational nature to it. And so, number one, you've got kind of this long-term positive history there where, you know, you've got people in your church whose grandparents founded that church and they've just been there the whole time. And so there's a lot of rich history to a rural context that affects the way you lead, and it affects the way people view their church, and it affects the way the community views their church. And it's a lot more about, you know, the individual reputations and kind of the, for lack of a better term, kind of the bloodlines or the histories of these families that make up this context. On the flip side, that generational kind of bend has a tougher side as well, because one of the things that rural is known for is that there can also be this generational sense of trauma and loss. You know, a lot of rural contexts are live off the land type people. Their fate might have been decided by factors out of their control, like markets and weather, you know, whether it's oil or agriculture or timber, or, you know, it can be a dozen industries that can either be great in the moment or years later have shifted. And what you find is that the rural church carries the scars of loss, of abandonment, of hardship, and they carry them for a long time.
Wow.
You know, because you've had the same grandpa who was born in that church and is now 70, 80, 90 years old, you know, coming in as a pastor, it can be unique. It can be a unique place to lead, because this board member, this individual, might have seen 12 pastors, might have seen 20 pastors in that time, who have all come in with bright and shiny ideas, who have all come in with the next big thing they're going to do, who have all tried, and then eventually they leave, and you've got these kind of people of the land, they're rooted to their context. And so you kind of have to lead differently, and I'm sure we'll get into that, but I would just totally dovetail off of what Julie said, is like there is a sense in which you are an outsider and you have to kind of earn your keep. And I think sometimes people balk at that and they get frustrated by it. But it's an integral part of somebody saying, here's this church I have valued for decades, and you're coming in to serve during one small season of it. And I think that's something to be deeply respected.
Yeah, you know? For sure. You know, one other thing, and I think, Joe, you probably would also understand this. I don't know that every rural community is a farming community, but the one I was in was. The greatest majority of the people that we were involved in their life were farmers. They had fields. And so there is a rhythm to that, for right? Sure. And I think if we're raised in traditional church, there is this idea of when the church doors are open, a good disciple is at church. And the reality was that there were times and seasons where for them to provide for their family, it might mean that they couldn't be in church on a Sunday morning. For sure. And we had to kind of reorient ourselves to what did it mean to live the life of faith, and what did it mean as a leader in a faith community, our church? What was our responsibility to the people who were in our church? Because as we got to know them, they're wonderful believers, genuine disciples. And so we had to look at it differently and say, wait, so our programming, if you will, our initiatives, all of these things needed to take a different look because we had to factor in the realities of the rhythms of their life in a rural environment, including for some of them, the fact that they commuted into larger cities to get for to sure. work. Mm-hmm. And that takes time to come home from as well.
Yeah. That's all so, so good. So, Joe, you wrote an incredible session for Hydrate on ministering in a rural community. And so would love to, well, as I was reading that, just getting to hear a little bit about your story, where you come from a large town or a large city, and then you suddenly find yourself as the youth pastor in this very small community. Talk us, you know, just a little bit about that experience and how that was for you.
Yeah, so to give context, you know, because I think that there are certain states where you have small towns and large towns and big cities. And so when I say I came from the largest town in Montana, let's be very clear, Montana's still a very rural state.
Sure.
Like, sure. Billings, where I grew up, probably has a greater area of, 100 to 120,000, which is not like a huge by a lot of people's standards. But again, that is like twice as big as our next largest town. And in Montana, you only have 7 communities who top 10,000 people.
Wow.
Out of the whole state. And so like it was interesting because I was 21 years old when I moved out to Baker, Montana. It's a town of 1,200 people along the North Dakota border. It was very important, though. It was on the right side of North Dakota border. You know, Montanans are very proud of where we come from and all that. But it was this town of 1,200. And so you're going, 100 times less in population. And so for me, the best metaphor I could use has, have you ever ridden a wooden roller coaster? Like where you just like pay somebody to have whiplash and
exactly.
simulate a car wreck?
Exactly.
Like that's how I felt. And so like,
sure.
I remember coming to this town. And again, I came from a town where like I could eat at a restaurant a day and like have options for a whole year. Stuff was 24 hours or stayed open till 11 or midnight. And I'm a night owl. So I just like loved being out and about, being able to drive, do things, go places. And I moved to this small town and everything closes at like 8 o'clock. And it like gutted me. And I was just like, what do I do with the next 5 hours of my life? Cause I stay up till midnight or 1 a.m. And like, and so I just remember being so shocked by just the pace of life. There was my kids. We recently moved back to Billings when I became student ministries director. My two young daughters had both been raised in Baker. And the first time we were in Billings and like they noticed, they were like, why are we there yet? And I was like, no, we're not at our destination. And they're like, well, then why are we stopped? I said, so these are called traffic lights. Okay. Like this is like literally they had to like
so true.
Rediscover so true. What like traffic lights were. Cause wild. We had this one 4-way stop in town and that was the only flashing red light. And so it just became this jarring experience. Where like one night I remember it was about a month or two after I moved there and I was just like so fed up with like not having options and I'm awake and I'm like, what the heck? So I drove to my nearest metropolitan area, a town of 10,000 that was 80 miles one way. I left at 10:30 at night and I get there because I wanted fast food and I rolled into the Wendy's drive-thru 2 minutes after it closed at midnight.
No.
And so I drove 160 miles to get gas station food in this. But I just, like, that was kind of my experience. And sure. So I was meeting people. I was learning quickly on the – so that was kind of the funny and the positive. There were some negative elements too. Like, I very quickly – got to experience what they call that outsider effect. I showed up, we had the blessing of the Lord for the youth ministry to kind of start ballooning relatively quickly. You know, I think the small town was fertile soil. We had a youth center that we got to run. And so we're very present with kids on the weekend and all those things. So it started to balloon, and there was sources from other churches in town. There was people, I mean, you know, this 21-year-old male shows up at a middle school girls volleyball game, and everyone's like, is this guy on some sort of watch list? And I mean, they were just like, there was some real, sure. There was rough patches. Sure. I mean, there were times in it where I just like felt both the blessing of that small town, the welcoming atmosphere, but also the rough parts where you're just like, man, what an adjustment to life. And so we stayed there to kind of finish up. We stayed there about 10 years, and I'm sure we'll get into it, but it was so fun to watch the community accept us over that 10 years, and it really did take the whole 10 years. I mean, I had somebody come to be in a coffee shop my last year in Baker and say, you know, we've been watching you for a while, and we really trust you, and they ended up, like, donating to our youth program, wow. And I was like, I have been here for almost a decade. Like, you know, like, it took you that long to figure out I wasn't like a terrible dude, you know, and it just, and it was a funny experience, but for sure that's that dynamic. And so we had some of our just amazing years of ministry there, my wife and I, and just had so much fun loving the students and kind of growing into those roles. And my wife did community development during that time. So we both got to be really involved in like what was happening. So that's kind of the short version of it, the kind of culture shock I got to experience.
So good. Well, you highlight something that's really important there, Joe, because you talk about the value and importance of relationships in rural ministry. And one of the things that I know you have talked about before is in that process, newish maybe even, that you kind of made a relational misstep. And so kind of let's talk about that. Why is that important? Why should that be a part of this conversation we're having today?
Yeah, because I think that for a lot of people who are rural leaders, a lot of rural leadership is finding out which metrics matter in measuring success in ministry. I think that, you know, it's the classic Einstein example of like, you know, if you judge a fish by its ability to climb a tree, it will believe it's stupid. You know what I'm saying? Right. And I think that oftentimes in rural settings, what makes it so difficult is that they don't actually care how good of a preacher you are.
That's true.
They don't care how hard you work. They don't, they do care how hard you work, but they don't care about like the programs you develop in the same way. They don't care that you have the latest administrative win that's going to totally streamline the church's system for whatever. They just don't, it doesn't matter to them in a lot of ways. What they care about instead is everything. And I almost put it as the factor of a rural setting is that relationship and trust are everything.
Yeah.
I will be a good pastor if you trust me to be a good pastor, if you trust me and care about, you know, if you know that I care about you and you had the chance to care about me. And so what happened was this first week it was actually probably the first couple of weeks I was there. We were having a church barbecue because I moved at the end of the summer. And this delightful grandmother in the church had approached me and said, hey, I would love for you to come up with some games for this like church barbecue. And at the time, in my defense, you know, 21-year-old Joe was like, hey, I just moved here and nothing's open and I'm really confused. And there's one traffic light. I don't know what's going on. I just was kind of overwhelmed. And so I just told her like, hey, I bet I could jump in that later, but I'd love to just experience the event first, you know, before you dive in, which a lot of people call like conventional wisdom, you know, of just like trying to look before you leap and trying to be cautious and kind of onboarding, we would call it. She kind of left. She wasn't like directly mad, but later I looked at my lead pastor and I said, yeah, such and such asked me to do this thing. And I said, no. And he just gave me this look like this like wide-eyed, incredulous, I can't believe you would say no to this founding pillar of our church and our community. And I learned pretty quick. I mean, I actually went to her and I said, hey, I'll do whatever you want me to do. Like you rectify these situations. But it was the first in a decade's worth of just the nature of small town is relational, and it's not the bummer is especially if you come in as you know, frequently younger leaders are coming in as associates doing youth and kids and whatever. But even if you're a young lead pastor, like any of these areas, you don't just get to care about the relationships that you quote unquote like directly affect. Like it didn't matter most days how well I was doing with students. Like, I, of course, like, it mattered. I say that facetiously a little bit, but like, it mattered that their parents and their grandparents and the guy who delivered the Pepsi products to my youth center and the school administrators and the checkers at the grocery store and really anybody you could think of, it mattered that I did my best to be in right relationship with them, because success was not measured by, oh, you loved kids well and grew this youth ministry and preached, you know, really well. It was more about like, are you pastoring a community? Are you living and dying with people? Are you kind of getting to the root of one half of the pastoral coin? It wasn't really the program and the driven and the director part of it. It was really more about, are you living and dying with people? Are you loving them well? Are you loving their families, being at their graduations, letting them pour into your life just as much as you pour into theirs? And so it's both blessing and frustration, because I could not for the life of me figure out why certain people's opinion about my job mattered, because I was just like, you are 70 years old and don't even know what a teenager is at this point. Like, you couldn't pick one out of a crowd, and yet you get to the right to tell me how to do my job. And
well, somebody, okay.
You know, it's a little feisty. Like you said, we have a feisty podcast.
Yeah, let's go.
You know,
like,
but you know, it's just definitely, definitely that mentality of like, how do all these opinions get to be part? And if you're not ready for it, like, it can drown you. It can just drown you in a second, because you're like, how am I being measured against all these people and all these opinions?
Yes.
You know, so that was kind of the start of that, is like, the success is measured by how well you build trust and relationships. And that's present in other ministry places and contexts, but it is pivotal in a rural place.
Yeah.
So we youth pastored in three different churches. The middle one that we were at was a small church outside Memphis, and you know, I what you're hitting on, Joe, is just, I mean, it is just so spot on. And you know, just even as you're talking, I'm going, oh yeah, I remember this, and I remember that.
Yes,
Julie, I would love for you, and Joe, I'm going to come back to you too, because I'd love for you to give some practical advice to our next gen leaders. So, you know, when we're talking about relationship and we're talking about trust, what are some practical ways that, you know, if a new kids pastor is coming into a rural church, what are some practical things? And then Joe, I'm going to come to you and ask you that from a youth ministry perspective. Mm-hmm. What are some things that they can do to help build that trust and that relational equity?
Yeah, you know, in my experience in one town, it was that the hub of town was schools. It was the elementary, the high school. And so being present at anything the school was doing was my first and best move. I was just there. I wanted to be in the life of the families in my community. So I was going to every little second grade concert, you know, they're so cute, you know. But, and then because I was there, I was having conversations with everyone around me
and
letting them, you know, just talk to me and ask me questions and laughing together and eating in the local establishment. Mm-hmm. Like, I was very visible in the community. And in our case, that the biggest was in the school. And so because relationship was key, after a stretch of time, I was familiar. They saw me. They knew me. Hi, Pastor Julie. Mm-hmm. And I could call them by name and I would stop and talk to them. Like, you have to move slowly in a rural community. So anytime I was out and about, it was almost like a mental thing for me to say, you've got to be slow. Move slowly. Talk with people, just do not be in a rush.
That's good.
So everywhere I was out in my community, anytime I saw somebody, I'd stop and I'd talk and I'd ask questions. How's Betty doing? How's your wife? How's such and such doing in school? You know, I just would be very, very intentional and present. That was critical for me. And again, it comes back down to relationship again.
That's it. So school really was probably one of those places.
That was the first place.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. Church was the other.
Sure.
And because our church was right in the middle of town, it was visible and present. Mm-hmm. But really, I needed to go to them before I expected them to come to me.
That's really good. Joe, what about you? What are some practical steps you could give a new youth pastor who's stepping into that rural church?
Yeah. So first, I mean, I think I could, you know, I always get bummed halfway through because I'm like, ah, Julie stole like the best part of, you know, like it really is such a huge tip, you know, to say like your school system matters. I think a lot of times, and I think it's less so now because I think we're all gaining this collective wisdom, but there was a time where it felt viable to almost like in youth ministry to say like, oh, I'm going to run this counter program into some school stuff and town stuff and whatever, but you just can't like you, you just, it's an unstoppable juggernaut. Like you're not going to win against the school system. And so, being intentional, I would also say like to an incoming youth pastor, like, in a small town, I think it's pivotal to recognize like what students you're there for. Small towns are great at supporting students, except for the ones they're not. So like, there's going to be students who have the name, the sports history, the roots in the town, who have grown up there, who like are loved well. And you might say, oh man, I'd love to build a youth group off of those kids. But really, the town's already supporting those kids. So you might try and rub up against that and say, oh, I could do counter programming here. I could pull this. And in some ways, you just have to let go of the whole, I'm going to decide what my demographic's going to be. You kind of have to say, who's showing up? Who needs it the most? Who needs my help? So I'd say that's one thing.
That's good.
And then to really dovetail off what Julie said, even beyond the school, you know, I've heard people say like, if you're not ready to spend 30 minutes in the grocery store to get a gallon of milk, yes, like you're not ready for small town ministry. And it's
true.
And it goes so far as to just plan your day as if you are going to get interrupted a lot.
So good.
And so when I would go to the store, I wouldn't say, oh, I have to go get a gallon of milk, so I have 5 minutes. I would say, okay, I have 20 minutes and I think that'll be an adequate amount of time to go to the store. So it's like planning for connecting with people.
Yeah.
And then one thing I did that I think, I mean, I feel like if you're an introvert, it could be rather exhausting, but like I really made sure to, anytime there was a chance for a person-to-person interaction versus a phone call, I would just drive downtown. Like, again, my town was 8 blocks by 6 blocks. Like, it was not a huge place. And so I could have called the bank and did whatever I needed to do for that. But instead, I drove to the bank. I talked to the cashiers and the tellers and all this. I would go to the store, and they did have, eventually, they installed some self-checkout places, you know, in our small-town grocery store. But I would always go to a cashier who was working because I just wanted one more touch point. If there was a drive through, often I would get out of my car. I would go inside a place. And so it's like Julie said, like a lot of it's just osmosis over time. They need to see you. They need to feel you out. And those moments of waiting in line at the grocery store, of waiting at the establishment where everyone eats, of showing up to the school event, like that is so pivotal in just the long-term growing of that relationship.
So good.
So good.
In your lesson, Joe, you hit on three kind of ministry tips. The first one, and I wish we had time to park even at the first one because it's so good. I want us to talk about the second one, but the first one you mentioned is that longevity truly is the key. Yeah. I think that could speak for anywhere, but for sure in the rural area,
especially,
right?
Just because of how long it takes to get to that relational place in a family to be able to speak into their life.
Good. So the second one, you use this, and I got your quote because it was just so good. You said, you have to love your town, not just your ministry. I heard Dr. Mark Batterson when he was talking about National Community Church up there in D.C. He made mention that basically what you're saying is you have to love your town. And oftentimes that requires knowing the history of your town. You know, what took place 100 years ago? What has happened, you know, in your town? But talk to us, Joe, you know, why you wrote that, why that's so important and how that can help your ministry.
Yeah, so I definitely wrote that from a place of a marital strife that I will definitely explain. My wife grew up in a small town, and I was kind of this small town transplant, if you will. And my wife at the time was the pastor's daughter at the church, and so then I met her, and then we got married, and you know, life's good. But when I moved there, I had come from Billings, again, this larger context. And without even realizing it, I was constantly drawing unfavorable comparisons to what I was finding in my new town with where I had come from. You know, I was busy saying, oh, well, in Billings, this would be open longer. In Billings, these strawberries were cheaper than the supermarket here. In Billings, you know, it would be, And eventually, we weren't even, I don't even know if we were dating yet, but my wife is a very smart and very forward individual. But she just looked at me and she says, hey, you just need to shut up about billings.
Yes.
Yeah. She said, you just need to shut up about billings. It's not really important. You're not there anymore. You're here. So either love here or go home. You know what I'm saying? Like, and it's very, you know, and she probably wasn't. I mean, in my brain, I probably, you know, build that up over the years. But
it was impactful nonetheless, right?
It was impactful where I started to recognize where I was like, the thing is, if you move to a Chicago, Minneapolis, like it is such a broad and diverse context that like the local history, the deep dives into stories, it's just too much. So people long ago have given up on that being like this pivotal factor in a large place. But in a small town, everybody recognizes the story, the history. And so when I say love your town, like you don't get the luxury of saying, man, I love the students at my youth ministry, but I sure hate that local hardware store. Like, you just don't get the luxury to, like, complain about it. And the thing is, some small towns, by nature, are hard places. Some of them have experienced decline. They have rough main streets. They do not have a ton of amenities. They recognize that they are a population in decline. They recognize that there are certain things they can no longer offer. But that's not really the point, is it? You know, the point is that like you go out and you buy the sweatshirt for the local high school and you cheer for their 1-7 football record as if they have just won the Super Bowl. And you just engage in story. Visit the free small town museum that doesn't seem on the surface to offer anything other than just a glimpse at the story. Ask people why that family name pops up so much.
Yes.
Ask people, man, I notice, are these all one farm over here? Or is there multiple families going on? And you just, it's about a posture of humble curiosity.
That's good. There you go.
Because right again, they are defensive. Small town people know that their context matters. But history is littered with stories of pastors who came in and acted like it didn't. Like you may be coming in as a pastor saying, oh, I'm just coming in because, you know, I'm here to pastor. And so you go to pitch a new idea and nobody follows you on it. And you kind of wonder, do these people hate me? But no, but the pastor 10 years ago, 12 years ago, 20 years ago, they used this church as a stepping stone to bigger and better. There's a history of abandonment, a history of pain, a history of members remembering the frustrations they had with people who came and kind of used or underappreciated a rural context. And so when you come in, the best thing you can do for somebody is say, hey, I see your story. I see that this town matters to you. And because it matters to you, it's going to matter to me. I had a moment, we did a lot of work on this property. It was an old 7-Eleven gas station, turned it into a youth center. And it's where we did a lot of our ministry. We spent 20 plus hours a week in this building, just relationally living life with kids and till all hours of the night. And it was just, it was a hoot. But there was this business owner about 6-7 years in. My wife was doing community development. She taught me a lot about writing grants. So we started getting some money to fix up the property and repave the parking lot because it had looked pretty run down and cut down the dead trees. And this business owner came up to me one day and he just said, hey, thank you for caring about the way that our town looks. And this was a guy who had been present in small ways, but after that, it was like the floodgates open. I mean, he would donate. I could call on him for anything when it came to supporting what we were doing because I had taken time to say, this is not about me, my call, my ministry. This is about loving a place that's worth loving and fully immersing yourself in that culture.
It's powerful. Any thoughts?
It's just he's hitting all the marks of it, you know, and I was just thinking about a story of an example of when I knew, I guess I had arrived in that community. Mm-hmm. I was sitting in my church building, which coincidentally was a converted barn. It was restored into a church.
There you go.
I was sitting in my office working and I got a text that said, hey, come outside and look up. And I was like, what? You know? And I walk out and some friends of ours, he was an airline pilot and he does what do you call it when you go spray the fields,
the
right?
Crop dusting.
Crop dusting.
Right? Yeah.
Did I get it right?
He was crop dusting
the
fields right next to the church. I didn't know that, but I come out and I look up and he's in this bright yellow plane and he dips his wing at me and he goes down and he comes back and he dips his wing at me again and he texts me. He's like, hey, I'm saying hi from there. Wow. Your space looks beautiful.
And texting and flying for the
record. But I, in that moment, instantly was like, there it is, yeah. right? Like, I have yeah. hit a mark with him that he would take the time mm-hmm. to text and say, hey, I'm flying right over your building. And hey, your building looks great. Your wow. space looks great. And hey, I was thinking of you, that's you awesome. Know? And so that is, you know, the story that came to mind as Joe was talking. And what he's saying to you is dead on. He awesome. He has it right.
That's so you're dropping such powerful
yeah.
Golden nuggets. Yeah. And so I'm really excited for this episode to come out. I think it's going to help a lot of people. So let's start to land the plane. And Joe, I'll just start with you. This is kind of the question that we have will end season two episodes this season. So the question for you is, Joe, if you could talk to 20-year-old Joe today, what would you say? What ministry advice would you give yourself at 20 years old?
I think it all revolves around that concept of I think I gave myself a lot of credit for your own success. I think it's a very young pastor thing sure. to do where you're like, look at how cool I am. This ministry blew up around me. Isn't that neat? You know, you just get all excited. And part of it comes from a healthy place.
Sure.
Like part of it, you're like, you're excited that God's doing something. Yeah. You're excited to see yeah. success at what you're doing. Like I get all that. But there's a little bit of that overconfidence where like you just want to believe. You're like, oh, I showed up. I prayed. I put in all my best leadership wisdom and God made things happen. It's all great. And I think that in the beginning of this journey in a small town, I was much less aware of how much value other people had in this process. There was a point in, and it was about 7 or 8 years into Baker, and it still makes me emotional to think about it. I came across a picture. We were cleaning out a file cabinet or something in the church, and it's a small town church, so you know you're pulling out like how to build a float for the 1955 float parade, and you're like, how does this still exist? Okay, like it's just so bonkers. True. But you're like cleaning out all this stuff, and we find a picture, and my lead pastor brings me this picture, and he says, hey, look at this. And it was the picture of the 7-Eleven on the day that the church purchased the property, and it was in August of 1999.
Wow.
Okay. And I just like looked at the timestamp and I froze because I realized that I was 7 years old.
Oh, wow.
Like I was, and so here I am like, having been 7 or 8 years where, and we talk about numbers and percentages and ways to measure small town. And like, and I was riding a high moment because me and my youth staff were looking back over the years of ministry and we realized that we had reached 75% of the student body with our programming. We realized that half of them had come to youth group on a consistent basis. You're talking about community impact that can be measured and felt. Like we were again in this amazing reflection on what God had been able to do. And so you're riding high on success. And then I had to confront the fact that before I got to come on the scene and be the cool guy who the Lord used to do this cool thing, that a board of human beings, when I was 7 years old, had the foresight to say, we care about the youth of this small town. And I just felt so dwarfed. I felt like I was standing on the shoulders of giants. I felt like there was so much beautiful history of people caring in ways that I could not even have fathomed or thought of, you know? And so the next Sunday at church, I get up and during announcements, I just said, hey, I came across this picture. We put it on the screen and I was able to, talk to the board members and the congregation members and just say, hey, thank you, because this success, this victory is not mine. It's yours. And you have led these students to the place we're at now. And you have seen these students get baptized and called to ministry and all these things. And it just, I think looking back, I would have told myself to be a little more curious, ask a lot more questions, do a lot more coffee dates with senior citizens who know stuff and who have sacrificed for me to get to step in when I did. And so, and honestly, that mentality is something that has carried me into my new role and has carried me into, and I believe will stick with me the rest of my life, is like, you need to recognize that your success is a complex thing, and it's often on the backs of people who are never going to get noticed or given accolades. And you just, it allows you to walk into a room instead of being frustrated with older people. I suddenly was like, man, what is their heartbeat? You know, it changed my whole perspective on how to glean from others around me. And I thought I was a collaborative leader before, and now I'm finding myself taking advice on next gen. I mean, I had in the DYD role, in the student ministries director role, I sent out a letter asking people at our campground to let us use their cabins during the summer because we were out of space and I needed places to put people. And I had mailed this out or I'd emailed it out, and this lady sent me a thing back in the mail. And so I get this snail mail from this like lady in her 60s, 70s, I can't really remember. And her name was Evelyn, and she on the back was like, "Hey, I really think that if you focused not just on asking us for use, but if you shared with us some of the highlights of the summer and prayer needs and whatever." And so she's handwritten in cursive, you know, this thing. And as a DYD, you know, I think Joe of age 20 would have been like, "Yeah, cool. Great advice, grandma." You know, like I just would have been really flippant about it. I probably would have said it gentler, but that would have been the internal mentality, sure. You know, but instead I was like, I called the lady who runs our camp letter and I said, "Hey, can I add an insert?" And then when I saw that lady at an event, later in the year, I said, "Hey, thank you for pouring into my life. That was such great wisdom you passed on." And I think that's rural ministry, so right? Good. It's the ability to say, "I am one person entering into a complex web of relationships, and they all have something to teach me about how to minister well," you know, and you still got to sort through the occasional weirdos who want to give you advice. And you're like, "I shouldn't let you in a school zone, much less around youth ministry," you know, so you get some interesting folks.
He's not wrong.
But
he's not
wrong. By and large, you're going to get a lot of wisdom poured into you, a lot of good people that you would otherwise miss if you were just not quite aware of it. So that'd be my final thought there.
Well, and can I dovetail on that? Like, because it's small town, I mean, he basically said what I would answer to this question, but he makes this point. We keep making this point. This small town, these individuals who are generational, they are invested in their town. That means that they care about what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And when they care enough to come and talk to us and say, "Hey," even if they don't understand today's kids, it's from this place that they care so much about and want their communities to be alive and thriving. And so, yes, that would be my answer too, about staying humble and staying curious and asking good questions. I think the other one I would add is don't compare, right? You cannot compare a rural ministry to any other. And so I tell a lot of young leaders, pray, spend time with God, hear what he has for you to do, and do it. Don't compare to what another ministry is doing. Don't try other methodologies. Let God direct your ministry. Let him show you. Let him reveal to you where your opportunities are. And while you're investing relationally and caring about people, those opportunities will show up. You'll notice things. You'll start to look at the school and say, "Hey, their bicycles are just in a mishmash pile because there's no place to park those bikes. I wonder if I could, or our church could, put a bike rack out there and say, 'Hey, our church cares about you and your kids, and we're going to give you a bike rack,' you know," and just paying attention and letting the Lord direct you is, I think, one of the really great things that I just like Joe said, I don't think it would have thought through that. I would have come in with my agenda as a 20-year-old. So
good.
Good stuff.
That's awesome. So, Joe, I just want to say thank you for just your passion. It comes through so clearly. You're such an incredible leader. Thank you for just taking the time to pour into our next gen leaders, whether they're serving in youth ministry, kids ministry. Julie, thank you for bringing your incredible wisdom as well. And so, Joe, I'm just going to ask you to pray. Would you just pray over our next gen leaders, whether they're ministering in a rural area or suburban, urban? Would you just pray for our leaders?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, God, we thank you just for the chance to do what we get to do. Lord, we reflect today on the idea of what it means to enter into the story of whether it be a church or an individual or a town or community, because that's what you did for us. Lord, you entered into our story. You came to earth. You chose to be incarnational, Lord. And I pray that every next gen leader would take this opportunity to just reflect on a universal truth that we are meant to enter into the story of others, Lord, that we are meant to live incarnationally as you did. Lord, we thank you for the example and the trail that you blazed in how to love the world well. And I pray that whatever context we find ourselves in, we would take those lessons to heart. I pray that you would lift weak hands and give wisdom to people who are struggling, Lord. We know that many contexts are challenging, Lord, but we know that you meet us in these places, and that there's not a single address you haven't tracked down, not a single ministry that you've forgotten about, not a single pastor that you don't see, wherever they are and whatever they're doing. So please, Lord, bless us as we seek to do your will and build your kingdom in your name. Amen. Well, thanks again, everybody, for tuning in to Rural Advancement this week. I really enjoyed the opportunity to be a part of the Next Gen Leaders podcast, and I hope that, as usual, the content you heard today was encouraging and empowering and helps equip you to do rural ministry better. As I mentioned earlier, you can find the link to the Next Gen Leaders podcast in the show notes. I encourage you to check it out. It's just a wonderful set of conversations regarding Next Gen topics or being shared by Next Gen Leaders. And I know it's enriched my life personally. As always, you can find Rural Advancement content on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or on ruraladvancement.com. But of course, we all know the best way to spread a podcast like this is just word of mouth, just talking to a leader and saying, hey, there's a set of conversations that you should totally be a part of. But for this week, I've been your host, Joe Epley, and I am excited to see you next week.